The Murthy law firm has been clarifying US immigration laws and procedures for foreign nationals since 1994. Teleconferences and podcasts were added to the resources available online in 2012. We are happy to offer this free service. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome to the Murthy Podcast. We're here to break down complex immigration topics for businesses and professionals. My name is Kevin Andrews, and joining with me today is my colleague, Maggie Wagner. We're going to be discussing L1s, L1 visas, L1 status, what an L1 is, who qualifies, and also talk about some recent trends and adjudications we've seen with processing cases and RFEs, and maybe what we'll expect to see in the near future. So Maggie, with that, can you tell us a little bit about L1s?
Yeah, thanks. So the L1 visa is a tool for multinational companies transferring key employees to U.S. And scrutiny has increased on these cases, and navigating the process can be a little tricky. So, Kevin, can you tell us a little bit about the basics of what an L1A and L1B are?
Yeah, definitely. So L1A, there's, like you said, L1A and L1B. L1A is, or L1 generally, is for an intercompany transferee to work in the U.S. So if there's a foreign entity and needs to place someone to work in the United States at a related U.S. entity, so there's two ways to do that. L1A is for a manager or executive professional, so someone who's managing a team of professional workers. And then L1B is for someone with specialized knowledge. So specialized knowledge is kind of like knowledge that's not easily transferable, that you gain on the job while working for the foreign entity. And to qualify, the beneficiary, the L1 beneficiary worker, needs to have worked at the foreign entity in the manager or specialized knowledge capacity for at least one continuous year in the last 3 years. And there also needs to be that qualifying corporate relationship between the foreign entity and the U.S. entity.
Great. Okay. So L1A is for managers and executives, and L1B is for specialized knowledge employees. And, you know, as I said earlier, USCIS has become stricter, especially when they're defining what counts as a manager and what counts as specialized knowledge. So can you talk a little bit about what a manager and what specialized knowledge actually means?
And you know, we've started to and expect to see a little bit more scrutiny on both of these things, like you said. So, you know, just calling somebody a manager isn't enough. You need to be overseeing a team of professional workers or managing an essential function of the business. But even when you're managing an essential function, you can't be doing it yourself. Like if there's some essential function that you're doing instead of managing a team of people who are doing it, it's probably not going to work. So there needs to be people involved, subordinate professional workers involved for the L1A manager. In L1B cases, again, so specialized knowledge is probably even more nebulous, more difficult, more subjective to establish. So, but generally speaking, the knowledge needs to be unique. It needs to be obtained on the job with the foreign entity and not easily transferable to another worker. So if you can learn this, you know, in a week or two or a month or two of training, it's just not considered, it won't qualify for specialized knowledge. And documenting the specialized knowledge also, that can be a little bit challenging because the types of evidence might vary from case to case. Maybe some people are authoring technical documents. Maybe some people are developing proprietary technology, and that would be wonderful to include. But often the specialized knowledge is so hyper-technical, and there's not a lot of primary evidence to establish it. So it needs to come through in the narrative from the employer about why this knowledge is so special.
Right. Okay. Well, when you talk about evidence, it's kind of a perfect segue into talking about the recent trends in requests for evidence and in our adjudication process for L1s, because USCIS has really heightened the scrutiny on L1 petitions, as you mentioned, especially for the functional managers and for the specialized knowledge employees. And common RFE issues do include proving the qualifying relationship between the entities, demonstrating that the manager is truly managing, not just performing the work, as you mentioned before, and showing how specialized knowledge is unique and necessary for the U.S. role. So those are all, you know, kind of heavily dependent on the evidence that the employer can provide.
And we're and we're also seeing sometimes they also question the experience abroad, you know, like documenting that you got that foreign experience to qualify for the U.S. job. And I think a practical tip there is with specialized knowledge. So there, you know, when you start as a manager at a foreign company, you might be managing on day one. You know, you here's your team of subordinates, make it happen. For specialized knowledge, again, because it's knowledge that's acquired on the job and it can't be easily transferable. So it needed to have taken some time to acquire that knowledge, some appreciable amount of time. It's basically, you know, virtually impossible to do a specialized knowledge case where somebody only has 1 year of experience at the prior company, because there needed to have been some ramp up period to acquire that specialized knowledge. So, you know, in my experience, you know, 3 to 6 month minimum to acquire the knowledge, and then a year of applying that knowledge. You know, you can't apply the knowledge before you have it. So I think another area that we're probably going to see a little heightened scrutiny is that prior experience, particularly for the specialized knowledge workers. Like, how did you acquire this knowledge, and then how did you apply that knowledge? So, you know, and with the RFEs, I think something else we're seeing, maybe more on the L1A side, is, you know, more detailed organization charts and payroll records to show, like, that the hierarchy, the managerial hierarchy and infrastructure associated with the, you know, the organization. And then for, like, you know, for on the specialized knowledge side, you know, we have a lot of clients that often place their L1 workers at third-party placement to work on some kind of project that's related to the specialized knowledge that the individual has. And, you know, USCIS has historically been more skeptical of third-party placement in H1 or L1, and that's something that we expect to see increase in the near future.
Right. So, you know, given all of this information, what can an employer actually do to increase the chances of approval, given the current administration and the heightened scrutiny? And, you know, what should a well-prepared petition include?
Yeah, I mean, like, very detailed job duties, not just of the foreign position and the U.S. position, but in the L1A cases, detailed description of the subordinate job duties to show that, you know, these are professional workers. They're not doing jobs that require less than a bachelor's degree. We do a lot of new office petitions. So this is somebody who's coming to the U.S. to establish the U.S. entity. And in that first year, they can do non-managerial tasks, not have subordinates because they're, you know, in the process of hiring them. But you need a really good business plan to spell out, you know, how it is that you're going to build the team so that by the end of the first year, you're not doing those non-managerial tasks anymore. Maybe in the near future, business plan for regular L1s, but, you know, first L1, but non-new office might be a good idea too, to establish the, you know, that it's a bona fide job offer, that there's real commercial activity for the individual to perform. So expanding business plan into other L1s besides new office might be, you know, a strategic direction that we go in. And then finally, for, you know, like we touched on this before with L1B and proving that their knowledge is advanced, specialized, that they received training, and that it would take a significant amount of time to transfer that knowledge, as I said earlier. So sometimes, like, having a, you know, like a regimented training curriculum at the employer might be a good way to establish the acquisition portion. In a lot of cases, the acquisition of knowledge happens through experience and achievement. So documenting and explaining the trajectory of the foreign worker's career path and experience and achievements might be another way to document specialized knowledge, especially in the, you know, higher scrutiny environment that we're in. The takeaway here is, you know, L1s are still a very useful work authorization option for multinational businesses, great alternative to H1 if you qualify, but the process has historically been more complex than for L1s than H. Historically, the visa, the scrutiny for applying for the visa is a little bit higher than H, and we expect that to ramp up. And but you know, USCIS as they start adjudicating these cases with higher scrutiny, I think applying some of these best practices and thinking about these issues probably more carefully in the next 4 years than we have in the last 4 years is probably the most important key takeaway here.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're considering an L1 petition, moral of the story, work with an experienced attorney, build a solid case from the start. So thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Great. Thank you guys. Bye.
This is a free service. The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.